Welcome to the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. I'm Justin Mason, lead fantasy writer and analyst over at friendsoffantasybenefits.com. Joining me on this episode is Matt Thompson. Matt, how you doing?
Good, man. Good to be back. A couple of weeks off. Work has been killing me like normal, but back and excited for today's guest. And hopefully everyone likes pitchers because we got you covered today.
Yeah. Today is our starting pitcher preview, and there is no person we'd rather have on for starting pitcher week than Doug Thorburn of Baseballholics Anonymous podcast. Doug, welcome back to the show.
Thank you so much for having me on, guys. I mean, you're having a pitcher preview. I'm so honored and stoked to be here because you know I've got so many opinions about every single stinking pitcher, and if you guys will indulge me, I will not shut up.
Well, we'll have to keep you a little bit under wraps because I've only had 3 hours of sleep, and I'm hoping to get maybe another two before I go into work tonight. But you know, this one always goes long. Like we are not getting out of here in an hour. So, like I know that's just the case. Doug, why don't you tell people where you reach on social media? Tell people a little bit about yourself because you do some really cool things that aren't really in the industry. And then you talk about Baseballholics Anonymous because it's one of my favorite podcasts that I'm not on.
You got it. People can find me on Twitter. I'm on Facebook too, but really Twitter is the only way I really interact. I'm at Doug_Thorburn. I used to write for Baseball Prospectus, RotoWire, RotoGrinders. Nowadays, on top of the Baseballholics Anonymous podcast, I work for Evolution Athletics, so I'm the director of R&D there, and I do, my specialty really is 3D motion capture, so it's just like you've seen in movies and video games, so they dot the guys up and all that kind of stuff. I do that for pitchers, essentially, and I'm in charge of, like I said, the R&D aspect of it, as well as pitcher evaluation, player development, and right now, I mean, it's a brand new company, so we're still... We're designing the curriculum as we go, but I mean, we all have 15 plus years experience in this game, so it definitely is coming from somewhere. But to be at that point, that exciting point, it's almost a tipping point of the content where we're getting to create a lot of it, but a lot of it is creating where we want the research to go, because you know there's so many things that we're not willing to say for sure yet, because honestly, maybe we've dug into it before, but we have a new way to dig into it now. And so we do coaching. We do, like I said, the motion capture, motion analysis. We coach the coaches, coach the players, you name it. When it comes to, and we're hoping to expand beyond just baseball, but obviously all of our backgrounds are baseball. So that's what we know best.
And it is a brand new company. You guys only have 33 followers on Twitter. So everybody go follow Evolution Athletics on Twitter @ Evo Athletics, but that's spelled with an X in athletics instead of a C. So definitely go give them a follow. Give Doug a follow. Talk about the Baseballholics Anonymous podcast because it's like my favorite podcast to listen to, especially because you always seem to beat Sammy in the game.
It's so much fun. I have more fun doing the Baseballholics Anonymous podcast than anything else in baseball, and that's really saying something, because I've been a baseballholic, addicted to baseball since I was a seven-year-old kid. And Sammy, I've known for, he's my podcast partner, Sammy Reed. I've known him for 20 years. We've played fantasy leagues. We've played adult baseball leagues together. We've attended games. We've talked baseball. I mean, to the point where you know a true baseballholic when they're not just into fantasy, or they're not just into prospects, or they're not just into their favorite team. They're into anything baseball related, and that's essentially what the podcast is. We set it up with four bases each time, a first, second, third, and home. Third base is always a game of some kind, and like I said, I have a pretty good track record in certain games, but I still can't get, what is it? Whose line is it anyway? Whose line is it anyway is all about stats, and Sammy, he has like a photogenic memory when it comes to photographic memory when it comes to remembering the stats and everything, so it's crazy. But my favorite part is actually at second base, we always do what's called extract, where we deep dive one player. I always pick a hitter for Sammy to do, he picks a pitcher for me, and we really get into not only all the numbers, but watching video and getting into the mechanics of it and trying to understand what is the case with this guy? What makes him unique? What makes him different? And what can we expect moving forward? That's always a ton of fun. And then we do some news up top at first base, and we always finish off with something just kind of baseball related that's interesting. So we actually just wrapped up our fantasy preview that'll be publishing tonight or tomorrow morning. And your boy Paul Spohr was our guest for the fantasy preview. So
did you have Vlad on there too for that?
We did, but we had some issues with recording. Alex is such a killer. We did. We had 4 hours of podcast material between Spohr and Vlad, and something happened with the Vlad feed, and hopefully we'll be able to re-record it, but I can't promise anything. So the only thing that's coming out right now is going to be the Spohr half, but yeah, that part's really a killer. There was such great content, and Vlad knows his stuff as well as anyone.
We just had Vlad on for Sleeper in the Bus today. That should be coming out tonight. So,
oh, nice.
Definitely. Nice. It was me, Jason, Paul, and Vlad talking some moves and then some NFBC stuff. So,
well, you can imagine, I mean, if you've heard the old Tin Stat podcast, that was me and Paul Spohr, those things go 3.5-4 hours. Well, Spohr and I, we only covered 2 bases, and we had an easy 2 hours. We had to stop ourselves short.
Well, and I miss the old Tin Stat podcast. For those of you who are just getting into fantasy baseball podcasts, you missed out. Doug and Paul used to do like the best pitching podcast you could ever imagine. Let's talk about some recent MLB moves, because of course, we're what, like a week and a half away from the start of the season, and now teams are starting to sign people. So, because that makes a ton of sense for them. First one we'll cover is Luke Kroy is being signed by the Oakland Athletics to probably be the number one catcher on that team, probably going to supplant Bruce Maxwell. So, Matt, what are your thoughts on Luke Kroy in Oakland?
I'm a little bit worried about Luke Kroy because everyone's well aware of the offensive downturn he's taken. It's a considerable one. And especially, got to get a little bit worried now because he's entering his age 31 season. And on top of everything, his offensive kind of, I guess, fallback came in two really nice offensive parks in Texas and Colorado. So now he's moving to Oakland. So from a ballpark point of view, it's not really good. Everything points to some sort of hidden injury that hasn't come out and hasn't surfaced yet. I still think that's what's going on here. But I think Luke Kroy is in two catcher leagues, he's a target for me. But if we're playing traditional one catcher format, I'm not even touching Luke Kroy. There's so many question marks, and I don't like the ballpark. I do think if he can rebound a little bit, Oakland's looking at a sneaky little club maybe this year. I like a lot of their pickups they've made. Just need a couple pitchers or something to step up. But the Luke Kroy complete fall off the map is baffling to me. And I hope he picks it back up. But he's still got some upside to be a top 10 catcher. But what is that saying nowadays?
Doug, what are your thoughts on Luke Kroy in Oakland?
There are a few things that are interesting to me about Luke Kroy. The first thing is that not too long ago, he's pretty darn good. Back in 2016, he slugged 500. He had 292, had played 142 games. But the other thing that I think is really interesting is if the bat doesn't come back. And keep in mind, this is a guy who did get on base at a 345 clip last year. The A's won't really have a problem with that, even if the power doesn't necessarily come back. But Luke Kroy was the de facto example poster boy for catcher framing. Like back in 2013, 14, something like that. Just as catcher framing was starting to get big. And I had a theory about it because pitchers who are directly over the top tend to miss high and tend to miss low. Well, the easiest pitch for a catcher to steal a strike on is a pitch under the zone because it's really hard for an umpire to see. For the catcher, he just has to drop his wrist. It's a really easy move for him. Well, the Brewers, more than any team I've ever seen in at least over the last 20, 25 years, they had an entire rotation of over-the-top guys who basically, when they mistime their pitches, they'd throw it under the zone, and he would just drop the wrist, and he was really good at it. And so I was convinced that part of – I wasn't saying that was everything, but I was convinced that part of his ranking so high, his lofty rankings on all the catcher framing metrics, or because he was taking advantage of that staff, that when he went somewhere else, they wouldn't look so hot. Well, sure enough – within 3 years, he went from the top framing catcher in the game to the worst framing catcher in the game. And again, I'm not saying he was that bad the whole time, but the fact that he went from a rotation where basically he was built for it. Now he's with the A's at value balance, at value posture. They're not going to have over-the-top guys. They're going to have guys who, when their pitches are mistimed, they miss laterally. They miss inside-outside. So long story short, I'm not sure if the frame metrics will be there. And if they're not and the power doesn't come back, and suddenly you've got a guy who's not helping on any end of the ball.
That's a really interesting breakdown of his defense. I never even thought about that as the reason for his defensive drop-off. In terms of the metrics, so that's some really good insight there. I personally think that if you wanted to buy in on Jonathan Lucroy, you've missed your opportunity because right now his ADP is going to be absolutely shooting through the roof. Now, I think he's a guy that even if the power doesn't come back to where it was in 2016, we'll still probably get a fair majority of the starts, and he should get back to double digit power and. You know, he isn't going to strike out. He's not that kind of guy. He's never really had huge strikeout numbers. He walks. So, I mean, I think he's got a pretty safe floor. I just don't know that the ceiling is ever going to get back to what we saw a couple years ago. And so, for me, unless I've already gotten a couple shares because I bought him in an AL-only league before he signed for a buck, just hoping that he signed in the American League, and bought him in another American League only recently. But I'm not going to pay the price that is going to be associated with his name and a full-time job that goes along with it now that he's signed. So let's talk about the next guy who signed, and that was Lance Lynn going to Minnesota. Start with you this time, Doug. What are your thoughts on Lynn in Minnesota?
You know, in general, I like Lynn, especially, I have to admit, because he outplays his FIP, and I hate FIP. I hate it. I think it's the worst stat in the world. It chooses to ignore like 2/3 of the play on the field, but whatever. But this is a guy who's outplayed his FIP every single step of the way. And I did it last year by a run and a half. And to be honest, I'm actually worried. I usually wouldn't be that worried because he's someone who's outplayed his FIP consistently. That he's been able to live with a low walk rate and. Middling home run rate and middling K rate, but all those metrics, and again, that's what FIP is based off of, is all the true outcomes, so home runs, walks, and strikeouts. All three of those rates just bottomed out last year and were ugly. I know his overall ERA of 3.43 was awesome. He started 33 games, can't complain about that. But I think things could be kind of rough this year unless we see a bounce back. From Lynn. He's a guy I want to root for, and I think it was a good signing because they got him so cheap. And, I think it was a one-year deal, wasn't it? You can't go wrong with that.
So. Yeah, one-year deal. Yeah,
Matt,
but I'm tempering my enthusiasm.
Matt, you're a Cardinals fan, so you've seen a lot of Lance Lynn over the years. I know you're a fan. Do you like this move for him?
For him, I feel bad for him. You wait, for your whole career to get to free agency. You know, he was one of the guys that signed a contract and signed away his arbitration years and took some of that money up front, which is probably a good thing, with the Tommy John that he had. And then he has Tommy John the year before free agency, or the 2 years before free agency, and so then his walk year, in a sense, is trying to convince teams that he's healthy again. So that kind of stinks for him. But, the last thing, famously the last thing to come back from Tommy John is always the command control. Command of his pitches. I mean, the thing with Lynn is, he comes back a little quicker from Tommy John, in my opinion, because he doesn't rely on the breaking ball. He throws so many variations of the fastball, sinker, cutter, two-seamer. He throws the four-seamer up in the zone. That's kind of how he gets by.
Which, by the way, is a recipe to beat FIP. If you want to beat FIP, have a bunch of pitches that move, but not a ton, so you're not missing bats, but you're getting weak contact.
And that's exactly what you said, how he outperforms his FIP, right? Because takes defense out of the game. Which I agree with you, but the thing with Lynn is the velocity appears to be back. It's a half mile an hour, half a mile an hour slower than previous seasons. But they did readjust and recalibrate the guns and stuff and how they read that stuff. So I think that's just a marginal thing. But I like him in Minnesota because he's going to be facing a lot of Kansas City Royal offense, a lot of Detroit, a lot of White Sox, and he's going to get those healthy. He's going to feast on those kind of teams in that division, so hopefully he could take advantage there. And one good thing for him, he goes from probably one of the worst outfield defenses to one of the best. With Byron Buxton running fly balls down from the outfield, can never be a bad thing. But you know, he outperformed his FIP and stuff, all that stuff, and he does that, you know, throughout his career he's done that, but it's an all right signing for Minnesota. It stabilizes their rotation, gives them a nice guy toward the end, but you know, he took the ball every day, which is all you can ask for from a Tommy John survivor, and you know, I think more of the same. Hopefully he keeps the home runs down to Minnesota. But yeah, I don't mind Lynn. I don't think it's an earth-shattering move, but it's a good one for both teams.
You know, he does such a good job of limiting hard contact. He was top 20 among qualified starters last year for lowest hard contact percentage, top 15 in inducing infield fly balls and in soft contact percentage. You know, that's one of the reasons why he's able to, you know, keep the ERA below the FIP and the XFIP, is he just does such a good job keeping batters off balance and letting them hit into soft contact. I really like the point you made, Matt, about the improvement of outfield defense. I think that will definitely help him as well. And I'm going to echo the point you made also about how trash that division is outside of the Indians. The Tigers are going to be bad. The White Sox are going to be bad. The Royals are going to be very, very, very bad. So it's a really nice move for him. I kind of, you know, usually you don't want to see a guy go from the NL to the AL, but I think in this case, I think he is actually a pretty decent value, and you don't have to pay very much for him. So he's not one of those guys that's going to win you your league, but he's definitely one of those guys that, you know, he had Tommy John in 2016. So he had 186 innings last year. No reason to think he can't do that again and provide some stabilizing ratio help.
One good thing, too, not to overlook, I want to dig into this a lot when we talk about Carlos Martinez coming up in this, but with Mike Matheny, he rides the starting pitchers very hard. The Cardinals were the team leader. It's a weird stat, so bear with me, in runs given up by a starting pitcher's last inning. Meaning, you know, he's always has a really slow late trigger with pulling his starting pitchers. So hopefully, I'm not too familiar with how Paul Molitor does that, but I know they haven't had great pitching staffs, but it cannot be worse. I promise you it can. So that's also an added benefit because, I mean, you get to Carlos Martinez, who we're going to talk about, you take a half a run off the ERA if you normalize that. So that's a big difference.
All right, let's talk about Jacob Arrieta, who signed a 3-year, $75 million deal to go to the Phillies. Doug, what are your thoughts on Arrieta? Can he bounce back?
You know, he's an interesting case because when he was going really hot, he was benefiting at least somewhat from a historic defense behind him. And not that he's a ball in play type of guy, but he was limiting the homers, wasn't giving up any hits. For 3 years with the Cubs, his hits per nine were 6.3, led the majors, 5.9, led the majors, 6.5. So you got to figure he's going to give something back. That's what he did last year. That was part of the issue. However, he also dropped 2 miles an hour last year, and that's despite the fact, and I believe, Matt, that you mentioned it earlier, that the guns were hot. Basically, they're being measured differently. They're catching the ball 5 feet earlier in the flight path than they had been before. And so basically everyone's velocity got bumped up a small fraction. But when you see a guy who had a tough year and also lost 2 miles an hour velocity, meanwhile, he hasn't been throwing his cutter as much. There's a lot of red flags. That said, Philly's shaping up to be a decent club. I mean, every single position player is at least an average to above average player, especially when you take defense into account. It's not a bad team.
Matt, what are your thoughts on Arrieta?
A lot of what Doug touched on, I mean, I gotta echo it. Thing to watch with Jake Arrieta, first pitch strike rate and swinging strike rate both took a decent nosedive between this past season and years past with the Cubs. I know he often finds – I live in Chicago, so I'm always hearing all the Cubs news and all that stuff. And, you know, he has a crossfire over across his body delivery. And a lot of times he gets out of sync with timing and all that stuff, and it happens to him quite a bit. At foot strike and stuff, a lot of times he's dragging his arm. I kind of sound like Doug.
Familiar.
Right. No, but at foot strike, you know, he drags his arm a little bit, and obviously slightest timing, you know, malfunction, I guess, can throw the, you know, throw it off just ever just enough to cause a problem. But if you can get his mechanics on track, and I know that's always a thing with him. You have a, you know, a potential steal for the Phillies here. And I was 3 years, $75 million for Jake Arrieta. Every team in baseball should have been lining up to give him a three-year deal. Because three-year deal for Arrieta is, but he keeps himself in tip-top shape. He's a big yoga guy, Pilates guy, all that stuff. And he's always in shape, and I think it's a solid investment. I understand the velocity concerns, but the breaking stuff is good enough to maybe he could mask it enough. And I'm a fan of Arrieta. I'm kind of jealous my team didn't sign him, to be honest.
You know, it's interesting, and maybe this is just a good little homework assignment for both of us, but looking at the fact that Arrieta's velocity went down a couple miles an hour and he was throwing fewer first pitch strikes, kind of it sounds, and again, I'm just creating a narrative here, but it sounds like someone who is maybe throwing his fastball more away from bats. Maybe he was throwing more first pitches away instead of in. Maybe he wasn't trying to establish that inner half because he knew he didn't have it. I don't know, but when a guy has velocity go down and command go down, at least an indicator of command, such as first pitch strike percentage, which is not perfect, but it is an indicator, that is definitely a red flag. And that tells me that maybe something was going on where he was adjusting his approach because his stuff wasn't quite there.
And if you just watching him pitch a lot, I mean, you could tell his sinker and his slider, they weren't as – they're kind of muted a bit. They didn't have as much killer movement as they had in years past. And again, not throwing as many first pitch strikes, you kind of won't throw the slider as much because you're behind in the count more and you kind of lose your feel for that pitch too. And so it could be a minor adjustment. It could point to something big. I know that's not great analysis, but – It could be nothing, or it could be something. I guess you just have to. The draft price to with him going into this offseason was a little bit baked into the fact that he didn't have a team. So if you got him in a lot of leagues, you might have stolen, but you're not stealing him anymore. But do keep this in mind. He's probably going to miss the first turn to the rotation because he's getting a late start on spring training and all that. And so maybe knock a start or two off of your projections. And if you're in a head-to-head league or a make plans for the first month of the season that don't involve him. But other than that, you should be fine.
Yeah, and that was what I was going to say because, you know, for me, when Arrieta's mechanics are good, he's good. You know, when he's on mechanically, he's usually pretty dominant. And part of the problem is mechanically he has not been as steady and not been able to repeat his delivery. And with the late start to the spring training and ultimately the season, I don't think we're going to get a really great look at him prior to draft days. And for me, that's the reason I'm out. It has nothing to do with, I think there is a really good chance he could bounce back, you know, gets a new pitching coach. Maybe they can work on some timing with him, work on getting the mechanics down a little bit cleaner. But until we see that, I'm not willing to pay the price where he's going currently. Now, I think there's going to be a lot of negative people. They don't like the park. You know, they don't like him leaving the really nice defense in Chicago and going to what will probably be a very poor defensive team in Philadelphia, considering Hoskins should not be playing the outfield. They lost Freddie Galvis. So, you know, I mean, I think there's going to be a lot of people talking him down, and that may depress his price instead of actually inflating it now that he's signed. And if that happens, then maybe I'll get a share or two. But for the most part, I'm probably staying away.
Here's a hot take. Aaron Nola is better than Arrieta for this year. Maybe that's not a hot take.
That's not a hot take at all. It's not even close to a hot take.
Damn.
That is like one of the coldest takes you've ever made, Matt.
Damn.
the other thing is interesting, especially in light of what you were saying about the different pitching coach, because he worked great with Chris Bosio. And that he helped solve that problem. He when he was with the Orioles, Arrieta had some of the craziest timing patterns I would ever see. He would stop at the top sometimes. He would not sometimes. He would slide step sometimes. Every pitch was different. He never had the same timing pattern. And then he literally worked at it. We had some guys from Prospectus who caught some of the side view, the side sessions they were working on. And it was literally just making sure he was consistent from first movement into foot strike. And making sure the timing was consistent, and definitely it got worse over the last couple of years, but it was light years ahead of anything he did with the Orioles. And unfortunately, it paints me a little bit pessimistic about his ability to make such a correction with the Phillies, because they knew what was up with the Cubs. They knew what was going on. They'd been working on it for a couple of years. They knew this player really well. Bossier knew the player really well. So that tempers my enthusiasm a little bit. But I, you know, with any full player, I always hope for the best. So hopefully he makes the improvement.
Yeah, I don't know much about the Phillies pitching coach, Rick Kranitz. So I don't know, you know, I don't know how good of a guy he is. He's not a name that I am familiar with. So we'll see. Let's get into kind of the meat of the starting pitcher preview. So, I'm just going to give you kind of some, you know, four man tiers, and you guys tell me who you like and why. And if you want to delve, you know, quickly into the other guys in there, you're more than welcome to. But we're going to start with the big four. We got Kershaw, Scherzer, Sale, Kluber, all guys going in the first round of 15 team drafts. Doug, I'll let you start. Who is your guy in the big four?
My guy in the big four is Scherzer. And I realize the automatic answer should be Kershaw. I actually do think Kershaw is the best pitcher in the game. However, Scherzer's thrown 200 innings for five straight seasons. He struck out 240 more guys for five straight seasons. He's had a whip under one in four of the last 5 years. He's had a K per nine over 10 each of the last 6 years. It's as automatic as you can ask for. He starts 33 games every stinking season. Actually, last year was only 31. Still got 200 frames. But just because of the security, I've got Scherzer as my number one in that group.
Matt, who you got?
Max Scherzer. He's my number one pitcher on the board. I actually have him and Kershaw ranked back-to-back in my rankings. And, yeah, a lot of what Doug said is, you know, everything and I agree with it. And thing with Scherzer, though, he did have his first DL stint, though, since 2009 last year. He still made 30 starts, so I wouldn't be too concerned about it. Home runs are still always kind of an issue with him, but luckily he has the stuff to make sure most of them are solo, and 68% of them over the last three years have been solo home runs, so that helps. And the innings total, the strikeout total, you can't really argue with it. One thing to watch, though, he did have a noticeable second half dip a little, and his ERA was up over a run in the second half last year. The WHIP was up, and Doug's favorite stats, the FIP and XFIP, were up too. But you know, he's Max Scherzer. He's dominant. Don't need to go too far into that. And just if he stays healthy, there's no reason to not. He won't. No reason for him not to be in the Cy Young conversation.
Remember last year when we were coming, you know, we're at about this point in spring training and everybody was afraid because Max Scherzer had an injured knuckle and people were talking about him having to change his grip on his fastball. And he dipped into the second round in like 12 team leagues and even 15 team leagues. That's pretty much how I won the Barf League last year, is because I was able to pair him with Altuve. and absolutely. Don't get me wrong. Like, there were other parts to it. But that
pretty much summarized.
Yeah, that was pretty much the reason. So, I mean, I'm going to sweep this one. It's Max Scherzer for me. It's just the stability. Obviously, I agree with Doug that if we were going based on talent alone, Kershaw would be the guy. I may or may not I think I have two more drafts in which that are either mixed or NL only. And I'm hoping to land a share of Kershaw before the end of it. Because I think this is like the 1 year where his price is a little bit depressed. That'll be the year that he, you know, puts together 32 starts again and really just is head and shoulders above everybody. But, you know, the safety factor from a pitcher like Max Scherzer, being able to count on him for 30 to 33 starts every season is just unparalleled, really, at his level. So for me, it's Max Scherzer. Not to crap on any of the big four, because I've ended up with all three of the four so far, minus Kershaw, in all my drafts so far.
Would you rank him?
I just wanted to make one quick note before we moved on past the big four, because it seems to me that, I mean, this is a very unique time. I mean, it used to be faux pas to take anyone other than Kershaw as a pitcher in the first round. Now those four guys are popping off the first 16 picks in every single draft that I see. And meanwhile, offense is going nuts. It reminds me a lot of the late 90s, early 2000s, where power was going insane for chemical reasons and whatnot. But we still had Pedro, Randy, Maddox, and Clemens. Four guys who are putting up numbers that would stand up next to any numbers from any era. Meanwhile, the rest of the league is going insane. And the second thing I wanted to mention, there's a fifth guy who would totally be part of this group. And I had to say it, even though it's a year and a half later. Jose Fernandez would absolutely be part of this big four if he were still on the mound and throwing bullets.
Well, and the interesting thing, too, because I didn't even think about Jose Fernandez, you know, in that concept, because you're totally right. Had he not passed away, tragically, he would be a part of this group more than likely, and he'd be kind of the bridge to the next generation.
Yeah.
Which we're missing a little bit. We've got Severino, we've got Syndergaard, but Syndergaard has serious health problems. Who knows if he'll be pitching into his 30s the way he is, you know, and the way things have gone for him so far. But, you know, I mean, Jose Fernandez would have been that bridge that apparently we don't really have. I can't remember what podcast was talking about it, but somebody was talking about it. It's like, if you look at, like, the top 20 pitchers or so, there's not that many guys who were 23, 24 years old and are the next, you know, generation of elite starters in fantasy. So it could get ugly here in a couple years.
Good point.
All right, let's talk about the next tier. The aforementioned Noah Syndergaard is in it. The aforementioned Luis Severino. We also have Steven Strasburg and Madison Bumgarner. Matt, start with you this time. Who's your guy and why?
On a per-start basis, I think Steven Strasburg would very much be in that upper tier. Obviously, we know the concerns and, you know, all that. He only started 28 games last year, but he was still, according to the metric I'm using, he was still a $30 pitcher last year, despite, you know, missing five starts. So I'm going with Strasburg. One of these years, he has to stay healthy, I would hope. It's hope and a prayer kind of thing. So I'll take my shot there. Although in, the Great Fantasy Baseball Invitational, Severino is my staff anchor, and I have no issue with that. But those are clearly the top two for me in this tier. But Strasburg is my guy. I'm going to go with him.
Doug, who are you going with?
My two in this tier are Strasburg and Bumgarner. And the argument for Syndergaard and Sport made a really good case for him. But it really gets down to why I like Max Scherzer so much. It's those counts. It's Syndergaard. With Syndergaard, you can't tell me that you can really count on a lot more than 150 innings from this guy. And if this is your ace and you're thinking I'm going to get a whip near one or even below, well, you want that sucker to really make a dent. Well, when you're throwing 200, 225 innings, it's making a dent. You're throwing 150, suddenly it's not really denting nearly so much. So for me, this comes down to the safety pick and the upside pick, and that's the Bumgarner versus Strasburg. Bumgarner has been the same exact guy for like 6 years. He had the shoulder injury last year, but it was a dirt bike incident. Obviously, didn't have anything to do with him actually throwing baseballs. It's not the most sexy pick in the world, but if you have the philosophy of, hey, I just don't want to screw up my pitcher, the first pitcher I get, he's a good way to go. Strasburg, it's definitely more risky, more volatile, but with the attitude of, I want to win this league, he's the type of guy who could win your league.
100%.
So it's a tough call between the two. It really depends on what I'm looking to do. And if I'm picking one of these guys, it means I'm picking, you know, probably obviously top part of the first round. So I have a great hitter to start. It kind of, the identity of that hitter is going to determine whether I go Bumgarner or Syndergaard. You know what I mean? Is it Trey Turner or is it Paul Goldschmidt?
Yeah, I'm, you know, here's the thing. If I don't get someone in the first foursome that we talked about, 99% of the time, I'm not going to worry about taking a starting pitcher until probably one of the tiers after this one. I've got serious questions about Bumgarner after watching him pitch last year. I don't think that he was ever fully recovered from the dirt bike accident. I think he struggled, you know, hitting his spots within the zone.
Which he never does.
Yeah, and that's the thing. He's one of those guys. And you know, the other thing is, you know, people don't draft Madison Bumgarner because they think there's a chance he's going to be a top five pitcher. They draft him because they know he's going to finish in the top 10. If that floor isn't there anymore, he doesn't have the strikeout upside to warrant being a top, you know, 6, 7, 8 pitcher in my eyes.
Interesting.
You know? And so for me, you know, I would implore you, Doug, especially, you know, because I trust your mechanical eye way better than I trust my own. I would say, you know, I'd love to hear an extract on Madison Bumgarner, you know, towards the end of last season, because he never looked right for me.
I feel like I'd have to see compared to this spring, because my first diagnosis would be whether or not, he looked right the end of last year. But one thing I feel like the fantasy community just constantly underestimates is how much players, especially pitchers, change year to year. In off-season, you just press the reset button. It changes everything. And so whatever you saw last year could be totally gone, especially if it was injury-related and he had the whole off-season of rest and rehab. At the same time, maybe it's an indicator of something. Maybe something didn't heal properly. Right. Maybe, you know, this is his throwing shoulder. Especially front side shoulder is responsible for accelerating the baseball. Backside shoulder for putting on the brakes during deceleration. Maybe there's something in there. You know, it's the type of thing that I'd want to see if there was something there, and then they'll look to see if it's still there this spring. That's why I love spring training, is all the homework we get to do based off of what we thought we knew last year.
And I'll be honest, I haven't been able to sit down yet and watch one of his outings in spring. And so
you gave me homework, so already we're even better friends because I love homework.
But I will definitely be sitting down and taking a look before I go to Tout Wars here this weekend, because he's definitely one of those guys that I think you know would be interesting in the head-to-head format that I'm in over in Tout Wars. But, you know, I don't want a guy that, you know, the beauty of Madison Bumgarner has always been how safe the floor is. And if the floor isn't that safe anymore, then what are we doing drafting him over my guy, which is Luis Severino? I love Luis Severino, one, because the price is cheaper than the other three. I really, you know, I was a big fan of his prior to last season, you know, and another one of those guys who I got late in the barf league. You know, I think what he did last season is completely legitimate. He finally got that third pitch, and instead of just getting a third pitch and making it average, it was actually a pretty decent pitch all the way through. I know people are afraid of the American League East, but he's shown that he can pitch there. So for me, there's no health issues like the other three, so I'm going to take Luis Severino at the discounted price.
That makes sense.
All right, let's talk about the next foursome. That is DeGrom, Carrasco, Verlander, and Greinke. All have interesting upsides and some warts. So Doug, I'll let you start this one. Who's your guy and why?
Well, it's either DeGrom or Carrasco, and I say either because they're so stinking similar as far as what they're going to give you from a rotisserie standpoint. I would, in a nutshell, or in a vacuum, I would favor Carrasco just because I think the Indians are way better than the Mets, so that's the only way I can do anything about wins, really. So I think he's the advantage for wins, but when it comes to ERA, WHIP, K per 9, or just total Ks, I think that they're 1A and 1B. So I'd say Carrasco, DeGrom for me are a little bit above the other two. Verlander more for the horse aspect. I like that. It's kind of that assurance that we were talking about with Bumgarner before, where at the very least you know you're getting 200 plus quality innings. Greinke I would have at the bottom of this list, even before hearing about how far down his velocity is. But before people freak out about where his velocity is, I do want us all to remember that it's March 12th, and, you know, velocity takes time to build. There are a lot of things that go into it. I would be more concerned a week from now if he's still throwing 84 to 87. The fact that he's worried about it is definitely a little bit of a concern, but it's not enough for me to totally jump ship yet. That said, I think the other three guys are just better pitchers.
All right, Matt. Where are you at on this foursome?
I'm right there with DeGrom and Carrasco. I couldn't decide which one I wanted. I'm going to default to DeGrom because of the National League, but I mean, like they said, both pitchers are going to have the luxury of beating up on terrible divisions. But Carrasco has the edge there because he doesn't have to face his own offense, which is clearly the best team. DeGrom will still have to face the Nationals, but he does get the Braves and the Marlins, and the Phillies might be a little sneaky team, but I'm going to go into DeGrom. Anybody that's able to defeat the Mets injury curse and come out unscathed, even though he's kind of got a back injury right now, which I'm not too worried about. I'm going DeGrom. I think he's obviously a contender for the National League Cy Young Award, and if him and Syndergaard can stay healthy, the Mets might make the playoffs. Those two are that good. So give me DeGrom by a hair over Carrasco, and I'm so anti-Greinke that I don't think he belongs in this tier. I need my pitcher I'm investing this high to strike out more batters, and he simply does not do that.
I would have been leading the rebuttal on Zach Greinke, Matt, if it wasn't for the fact that he's throwing 85 miles an hour in spring training. Because that is... I know Doug said he's not as worried about it. I'm absolutely petrified. And I'm
you know really... who else throws 85 miles an hour now?
You?
Adam Wainwright.
Yeah. I was super excited about Greinke, putting in the humidor. He's a really smart pitcher, and if any pitcher in Major League Baseball is smart enough and more of a pitcher than a thrower, and able to handle reduced velocity, it is Zach Greinke. But I'm staying away now. I got my couple shares early in draft season, and I'm probably going to stick away. So I'm with you guys. It's between DeGrom and Carrasco. I think they both have really, really nice upsides. They obviously both have injury histories. DeGrom is dealing with an injury right now, and so that's why I lead Carrasco. And, I mean, that division, like Matt mentioned, is just so atrocious, and he not having to face his own lineup. While DeGrom is, in a division full of bad teams, he doesn't get to pitch against his own team, so that doesn't help quite as much as Carrasco getting to go up against the other four in the AL Central. All right, let's talk about some of the other guys. I know who Matt's going to take. Carlos Martinez is in this tier.
I don't know that.
Versus Yu Darvish versus Robbie Ray versus Chris Archer. So, Matt, you're a homer. You're a huge Cardinals fan. Talk about Carlos Martinez.
I like Martinez the most out of this group.
Shocking.
Him and Archer are the two guys I like. I seem to be getting Archer everywhere. But C-Mart, I went over that stat earlier. I think with Mike Maddox handling the pitching completely, as in it's his call when the starter comes out of the game and his call who comes in out of the bullpen, I think that's a great thing for potentially the Cardinals pitchers. So that should help. And Martinez, he just needs – it's the little things now to get from that elite number two to the ace, and he just needs to work on – getting lefties a little bit. Lefties, he's a little bit below average against lefties. The changeup should take another step forward, I hope, this year. And then Archer, like I said, I'm a little bit worried with how slider-heavy he is. He's been kind of an enigma lately. No one understands why he isn't pitching to what his peripherals say they should be. But I have faith in Archer rebounding. And, yes, I know the division is the worst one to pitch in, and he's on the worst team probably in that division in Tampa. And he has to face the four offenses that are elite. But I still like Archer. He's been getting it done for years. I'm a little bit worried, like I said, with the heavy slider approach. I'm not really sold on Robbie Ray's command, and I think Darvish is hurt, to sum it up nicely. So, yeah.
All right, Doug, who do you got?
Well, there are two things statistically in Roto that I look for in my pitchers. Number one, strikeouts and K rate. Number two is whip. The reason I like those two is I found them to be the most stable, the most consistent, the most reliable over time. So which of these four do you think that I'm big
Robbie on? Ray, baby.
Darvish.
No.
Oh.
It's Darvish. Yeah. Now, I'm curious to why you think he's hurt.
I thought I read an article where the arm angle was down, or arm angle was changed, excuse me, and that I think there's more to tipping his pitches than the Astros had in the World Series. In my opinion.
Okay. Now, I don't know about the hurt aspect. I would be surprised if he was hurt. There's nothing I noticed. I do know that the Dodgers made some adjustments with him as pretty much as soon as he came aboard. So he had 2 months to learn on the fly before pitching in the playoffs with apparently they made some mechanical adjustments. To be honest, I hate to hear that because I love the guy's delivery. I think his pitches, his slider is one of the nastiest pitches in the game today. I was all over him last year because I thought the Rangers was just going to – it was his last year, obviously, with the Rangers, and I thought just to get something for their investment, they were going to throw him out there like crazy. Yeah, obviously, the innings weren't there, so that's a big worry. But to me, this is the difference between number one pitcher, number two pitcher. If I'm getting my number one pitcher, I'm not rolling the dice on Yu Darvish. But I'm kind of assuming this is my number two at this point. Now, I've always been someone who invests a lot of resources in my top two starters. I then take a nap for a long time on pitching, but I think those top two are just that important. I'm big on Yu Darvish. I think the World Series hiccups were not his fault. I've never seen so many pitches that had slider spin but went straight as an arrow at 94 miles an hour. Clearly, he wasn't getting a grip on it. He was not able to get the same, despite the fact that he was putting slider spin on the pitch, the pitch wasn't moving. So he wasn't getting the same aerodynamic effects that he's used to getting with that pitch. And on top of that, whatever adjustments he made with the Dodgers, again, I'm going to refer back to the idea that guys are so different season to season. I think that in a new organization, having a full offseason with them, all the offensive reasons to think that that's probably going to help him in the wins column. I trust the ERA marks overall. I think he was fine last year. I think his World Series performance was more a result of the ball than anything. It was, to me, the first or the most blatant example that something was wrong with the seams because his slider was not working. And I've never seen a slider, a pitch that moves as much as anything other than Jose Fernandez's defector than that I've ever seen. To see that pitch move straight as an arrow with slider spin was weird, and it freaked me out. But that was last year. So I look at it this year, and of those four, he's the guy I feel best about.
Okay. When I look for a starting pitcher, you know, especially an elite one, what I look for is strikeouts, strikeout rate, and whip. And therefore, I'm going to take the guy who has the strikeout, or who had the best strikeout rate and best whip out of this foursome last year, and that was Robbie Ray, guys.
Okay. Before we get into Robbie, let's talk about Ray, because why was his whip so low?
So overrated.
I don't know, Doug. Tell me.
Why was his whip so low? Yes, you do know.
Because he's amazing. Because he strikes everybody out.
Because he walks everyone in the world, but his hit rate was insanely low.
Yeah, it was.
There's no way he's replicating that hit rate, even with the humidor, even with the Diamondbacks having more outfielders who can run and whatnot and be fly catchers out there. His hit rate's going to go up. His walk rate just gets worse and worse. He's a year removed from a 4.90 ERA, and he has the same component skills that put that up. And meanwhile, he's never thrown 175 innings in his career. And again, yep. Darvish ain't exactly the picture of health. But these are the reasons why I am very afraid of Robbie Ray.
There's lots of reasons to be afraid of Robbie Ray. And
Here's some numbers for you. Robbie Ray led Major League Baseball in walks per nine last year among qualified starters, led Major League Baseball amongst qualified starters in hard contact rate allowed, and he was second in Major League Baseball in qualified starters.
But the humidor. Right.
The humidor makes him throw more strikes, huh? Humidor makes you throw more strikes?
Of course it will. It solves all problems. Obviously,
he's not afraid of the results on balls in play anymore. If it's gonna, the ball's gonna be dead, and so sure, he's gonna throw more strikes.
I mean, obviously, I'm joking around, but I mean, I honestly love Robbie Ray, and if the humidor helps keep the ball in the park a little bit for him and take some of the hard contact away, I think we could be looking at a big season. Yes, he has some serious control issues, and that is. That is scary, but he's one of those guys that I want to pair with another starter. Just like you mentioned, Doug, you wouldn't take Yu Darvish as your number one starter. You wouldn't want to take him as your number one starter. I don't want to take Robbie Ray as my number one starter either. This is a pairing with another guy, especially if I feel like I've gotten some safety. If I've taken like a Corey Kluber in the first round and I'm getting Robbie Ray in the fifth, that's where I'm feeling pretty comfortable with Robbie Ray. If I'm looking for a first starter, I'd rather have Carlos Martinez. I like what I saw from Carlos Martinez last year. I agree with Matt. I think a little bit better usage by the Cardinals, and he could take a really big step forward. And so if I'm taking my second starter, it's the upside of Robbie Ray. If I'm taking my first starter, it's the safety of Carlos Martinez.
Makes sense.
Let's go ahead and move on and talk about the next tier of guys. And these have some, you know, one guy who is kind of like the steady Eddie of the group, obviously. But then some polarizing guys. You got Aaron Nola, Shohei Ohtani, Paxton, and then obviously the steady Eddie is Quintana. So, Matt, who would you take out of this tier?
I think the guy I'm taking out of here is Aaron Nola. Yeah, he hasn't pitched 200 innings, haven't shown durability yet. But I think that's just the next thing he needs to check off. Had that little back problem that delayed the start of the season. I love what this kid's doing. I tracked him a lot at LSU. I didn't think he'd ever be anything more than a mid-rotation arm, and I was wrong. Aaron Nola is my guy in this tier. Also, I want to make this clear, though. I don't want any of these guys as my number one.
No.
These guys are all my number two guys, and I'm not touching Ohtani, so I can get him out of it. He's not even in consideration for me for this tier. And Paxton... You know, Paxton's going to depend on a lot who your number one starter is. If your number one starter is Steven Strasburg, you're not taking Paxton. If you have a horse like a Bumgarner traditionally, you might gamble on Paxton as your number two. But that's all going to depend on that. But Nola, Quintana, Paxton for me in that order.
Yeah, Paxton's one of those guys that, like, if you, for instance, I'm in American League slow auction going on right now. And I took my first starter that I bought was Chris Archer at $23. Paxton's a great guy to pair with him because I know I'm going to get innings out of Chris Archer.
There you go.
You know, yep. I don't necessarily know that they're going to be premium, but that's what I get a guy like Paxton for. So, Doug, who do you like out of this group?
Well, I mean, Paxton is a little too unreliable for me. Even no matter how good he's been when on the mound, you look at not only his lack of innings, but also just how much he's changed over the last 2 to 3 years. I don't really know what we're going to get next year. Maybe it'll be a continual slide of improvement, in which case, awesome. But I'm not willing to trust it yet. With Quintana, he's one of those guys that I totally appreciate the skill set, but I never seem to end up with, just because I tend to be looking for more that guy that he's going to make the huge difference. So that leads me down to Nola or Ohtani. Nola, I think, I mean, some forget, he was a 7th overall pick back when he was drafted out of LSU. He was definitely considered very highly. I love his delivery. I like that he brings something different. He's got that super low arm slot. I know there's a lot of caveats. I do think that right now the hype helium balloon has gotten a little overinflated with Nola, and it's funny to me because if you were to turn back the clock like 6 months, that guy would have been Ohtani. And Nola was a guy that still, like, if you had one of those super early, like, November drafts or something like that, someone takes Nola and everyone groans, oh, crap, they had him stashed away. They thought he was a secret. Well, he's not a secret anymore. And people realize they have to pay up for him. Well, Ohtani's really fallen out of love in a lot of ways. Meanwhile, if you've seen any of the footage from spring, holy crap. That splitter is nasty. That slider is insane. And we haven't even seen the 99 miles an hour yet. So, I don't know. I think his upside so far exceeds everyone else in this group that I couldn't help but take Ohtani at this point if those were the options. And I say that knowing that it might be a complete loss. But, again, I tend to invest a lot in my first two pitchers. So, if I'm looking here, I'm looking at my number three.
That's really interesting. I would ask you, because here's my, like, big issue with Ohtani, and the reason why I'm not going to have any shares.
The innings pitched.
Yeah, how many innings pitched would you project for Ohtani this year?
I hate to give this answer, but I think a projection for him is foolish. Because we have no idea.
Yeah,
we have no idea how the Angels are going to use him. The Angels have him for a long time, so they have long-term investment reasons to maybe play it safe. Maybe they decide to say screw it and throw caution to the wind. We don't know how much they're gonna allow him to hit, to what extent it's going to be development. This is a guy, he's like 23, 24 years old. He's so young. I don't know how they're going to use him, but I have seen all these projections and predictions that he's going to pitch anywhere from 125 to 150 innings, and that's a fine projection, but that is nowhere near the actual truth. We have so little information that the projections are complete and utter garbage at this point. So it's more of a gut feel. If you appreciate the skills and you're willing to roll the dice, go for it. If you're not, I totally get it. And that's why Quintana is kind of the perfect juxtaposition, because you know what you're going to get out of Quintana. It's not sexy, but it is a good number two, number three starter. It'll give you the stat filler that you need. But Ohtani might win you a league. He might also lose you a league.
Yeah. and I got asked about, I was on the Rotoballer show on Sirius really, really early this morning, like 4:30 in the morning my time. And they asked me, like, what I think about Ohtani. And I said, like, I think at some point in his, you know, career, and probably maybe as soon as next year, we're talking about Ohtani as a top 10, top 5 starting pitcher in fantasy. I just don't know how many innings he's going to get this year. And so I can't properly value him. Like, it's impossible. I want to say, like, I feel like 140 is the appropriate level, but like Doug said, like, that is guessing. That is, like, educated guesswork. And do I want to put my, you know, eggs in that basket with my number three pitcher or even my number two pitcher? And I don't. I just don't. Like, and I love Ohtani's upside. I, you know, watching him pitch in spring training so far this year, there's been times where he just looks absolutely unhittable. But I just don't know. I don't know where the innings are going to come from, you know, with a 6-man rotation, with the supposed, you know, partial, you know, slight tear of his UCL, you know, the fact that he only threw like 16 innings last year or something like that in Japan. I just don't know, like, where the innings are going to be. And so for that reason alone, I've got to be out on Ohtani, because for me, I want to have some safety. And for that reason, yep, I'm actually going to take Jose Quintana this group. Now, I may actually have Aaron Nola ranked a little bit higher, and that's purely based on upside. But the safety of Quintana, and the more I think about it, I mean, this is a guy before last season had 4 straight years of a 3.51 ERA or less. And then last year, you know, a little bit of turmoil as he's, you know, rumored to be traded, as, you know, he's waiting to figure out where he's going to end up. Ends up in Chicago, puts up his highest strikeouts per 9 at the major league level. If those two things can converge, if he can get back to the ERAs he's shown in the past 3 or 4 seasons, and he can keep at least the majority of that strikeout rate increase, we're talking about a guy who is no longer just a steady Eddie and really safe. We're talking about a guy who should be bumped up a tier or two. And so I think Quintana has maybe this unspoken upside that we're just not talking about in the industry.
I keep hearing steady Eddie like Guardado. Are you saying Quintana's going to be a closer?
Oh my God, I haven't thought about that guy in too long.
Just saying it. You kept saying it. Like, oh my God, why do I keep thinking of Guardado?
Oh man, I miss that guy. Oh. All right, let's move on to another tier that's got some steady Eddies and also some kind of risk reward plays, and that's Rich Hill versus Zach Godley versus Jeff Samardzija versus Marcus Stroman. Matt, let you lead this one off. Who you got?
I feel bad because Rich Hill's my boy. We go way back because he's 45. But you know, the thing with Hill is that used to be baked into the price. He used to be able to get him for nothing because the injury concerns were so rampant with him. Going into his age 38 season, last year he threw 136 innings. That's his high by a long shot his last 4 or 5 years, and he's still going as high as he is. But just for that reason, I'm going to take Jeff Samardzija out of this tier because –
How dare
how
you?
How many 200-inning horses are there right now?
Mm-hmm.
Especially ones that strike out guys like Samardzija does and have peripherals and check like he does, pitch in the ballpark like he does. And getting Denard Span out of center field can only be a good thing for any pitcher, regardless of who his replacement is. he was that bad out there. So I'm going to take Samardzija, but with the caveat, if it's a shallow league, give me Rich Hill and the potential elite innings. But if it's a league with any depth at all, give me Samardzija.
Doug, who you got?
Can I take a pass on this entire tier?
Really?
When I see these guys as my options, I go, okay, well, let's see what the bats look like. Because I don't like any of these guys. I'm not, and I shouldn't say I don't like, because Stroman's one of my favorite pitchers on the planet. From a fantasy standpoint, I don't think he's that strong.
Mm-hmm. And then he's dealing with a shoulder injury.
He's someone I really enjoy watching pitch. But at the same time, from a fantasy standpoint, I don't really get it. For Zach Godley, I am very curious to see what he does this year. And last year was certainly exciting. But that was the first time his career he's done anything even close to that. The guy's 27 years old, and he's never pitched that many innings. He's never struck out that many batters. He's never done any of that. So again, I got to think there's probably some hitter at that point. I'm looking instead. Rich Hill, the innings are so low, and not only on a combined inning standpoint, but also this guy struggles to go more than five. So you're not going to have a big win total from this guy. He's not going to be a strikeout windfall because he's not going to pitch enough innings. At least that's the expectation. I mean, he's thrown more than 111 innings twice in his career. And he's thrown more than 135 once. And that was in 2007. So people who are penciling in for like 140, 150 thinking, oh, yeah, he's injury prone. No, he's never done that. No, you better be penciling him in for 120 and hoping he continues to be as amazing as he was for 120. But you know, his blisters are no joke. And his age is no joke. And the ability to stay on the field, health, is a skill. And Rich Hill just hasn't shown it yet. Now, maybe he will, and maybe I'll look stupid with egg on my face because he ends up being awesome all year, and I totally see it from a per-inning standpoint. But he looks to me like someone who will basically lower your ratios and maybe help your strikeouts. You can get Dellin Patonsis for 12 rounds later, and he does the same thing. And then there's Jeff Samardzija, and I actually really like Samardzija. I like his context, I like his ballpark. His walk was insane last year. I've always he was better than that bad year he had at the Cell with the White Sox. So I guess if forced to pick someone from this group, it would be Samardzija, but I wouldn't love it. To be honest, the next group, and I'm not sure if ADP was considered. I'm not even sure where we
are. Yeah, this is all done by ADP.
Okay, so the next group is all lower ADP?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I prefer three out of those four guys to any of these four.
Wow, okay. I'm going to agree with Matt and say it's Jeff Samardzija for me. It's 200 innings. I know the ERA wasn't great last year, but the underlying statistics show that like he pitched better than it showed. I mean, he really just gave up too many home runs. You just can't give up that many home runs, especially in a home ballpark like San Francisco. You didn't get burnt by all of them because more than likely you weren't starting him in his Colorado starts where he got tossed. But I mean, still he earned those home runs no matter where he pitched. But I think you could see some pretty marked improvement there. I think you could see it in his strand rate, which was way below his career norm. And I think Matt mentioned something kind of off the cuff that is actually really important is the Giants' defense is markedly improved by their transactions they made this year. Getting Denard Span out of center, getting Hunter Pence over to left field and putting Andrew McCutchen in right, adding Evan Longoria, who's a great defensive third baseman, and pairing him with Brandon Crawford on that side. I think there is something to be said that defense will help Jeff Samardzija out quite a bit, especially in the outfield defense. So, I'm a big Samardzija fan. There's a ton of innings there. I'm hoping nobody from my Tout Wars head-to-head league is listening, but Jeff Samardzija will be on my team. I can guarantee that. All right, let's move into the next tier, and I'll throw it to you then, Doug, since you said you like at least three of these guys in this tier. You got Trevor Bauer, Sonny Gray, Lance McCullers, Johnny Cueto. Who do you like the most, and why?
I love Lance McCullers this year. He is my...
I think I heard you say that last year.
Yeah, I probably did.
Oh, burn.
And I probably, for all this, in fact, I think I said as much literally on the podcast that we just recorded, is I think he was my guy last year. So I get it.
But, I'm there with you, but
I just saw a GIF of him on, it's pronounced GIF, right? I saw a GIF of him online on Twitter throwing a 96 mile an hour sinker, and it was ridiculous. So.
Oh yeah, because that's been like the one of the highlights of the spring has been the gifts of McCullers throwing two seamers or sinkers. Their arm side movement is just disgusting.
Yeah, I can't even describe it. The hitter missed it by like 2 feet, and he just went, nope. All right, he shook his head as he's walking back. It was funny, but yeah, it was
nasty. He's always been basically a two pitch guy: sinker, curve, sinker, curve. He showed in the playoffs last year. He'll go ahead and throw 24 straight curves and not blink an eye.
Oh my god! I'm watching these GIFs right now. By the way,
did you see that?
The Astros have shown that they don't really care about the whole 30%, 40% slider, breaking ball bullshit. So he's going to be able to throw his best pitches. His second best pitch just got insanely better. Meanwhile, he's throwing the thing 94 to 96 on average. I mean, his average on the sinker was a 94.5 last year. So I see mechanically, he's how lovely it is mechanically. I really like the stuff. I see the improvements he's made from last year. He was already a guy I was big on, obviously, a year ago, and I was big on him again coming into this year. Now I see what he's doing with the two-seamer, and he's not the only one. Have you seen the gifts of Morton? Jeez, it's like the Astros just figured out, oh, okay, this is how you teach two-seamers. And now all of our guys throw insane arm-side run. So McCullers is my guy here. To be honest, like I said, three of the four I like better. I prefer Cueto to Smarja on his own team. But the one guy I don't like, and I don't understand the infatuation with him, and that's Trevor Bauer.
Why don't you like him? I mean, is it because he tinkers too much?
Well, I mean, that's the easy thing, right, is to say, well, this guy shows up every season with a different delivery, so that's weird. I'm more looking at, and I get the upside. We all saw it, that one playoff start, how amazing he can be. We all saw the next playoff start, how shitty he can be. But I'm looking at a guy who has never had an ERA under 4.18 in his career. He's never had a WHIP under 1.31 in his career. Last year was the first time he'd ever had more than a K per inning in his career. He's had a walk rate over 3.1 walks per nine every single season, or over 8% every single season of his career. So all the things I look at, it's like, wow, well, he finally got that K rate up, I guess. And, you know, he won a lot of games, but so did everyone, the Indians. Yeah, you're on the team that won the most, so you got W's. I'm pretty sure we're past that sabermetrically. So, I just don't get it. I believe in what he can become, the core skills, but until I see it, I'm not about to pay for the assumption that he's going to get better. And one playoff start certainly isn't going to change my mind. And so when I see him among these guys who, I mean, I would be stoked on either of the other three, I would look at those as potential guys who, they're basically perfect number three: Sonny Gray, Johnny Cueto, Lance McCullers. They're the types of guys who could be realistic high-end number twos if everything cracks right. So to get them as a number three, you feel great about it. Bauer, I feel like, is just going to be a disappointing four for most people.
All right, Matt, what's your take? Who do you got?
Johnny Cueto. Number one, he's going after all these guys. And I think he's got it's hard to say this after last year, but I think he's got a nice level of safety that these other three do not have. You look at the first half of the season for Cueto last year, which is probably the floor. 106 innings, 96 strikeouts, 4.26 ERA, 1.33 WHIP, which is a little bit high for him. He had blister issues. Wasn't throwing as many strikes as he had last year. But you look at the 15 and 16, ERA 3.4, 2.7. The WHIP was 1.1, 1.09. That's kind of the pitcher I hope Cueto can be. Again, I don't think he's that far removed from that. Throughout the second half of stats last year, he was hurt and only made a handful of starts. Gave up more line drives and more home runs. I'm hoping that's a blip on the radar. I hope he comes back to, you know, where he was in the previous seasons. And then again, if I'm in a shallow league, I'm going to roll the dice on McCullers, but not over Cueto. It's Cueto, McCullers for me, and then Bauer, Gray in that order. I think McCullers and Bauer are very similar, and it's in the sense that, you know, they're heavy breaking ball usage, and they've shown that they can rely on those pitches at stretches at a time. And I associate that with volatility more than I should probably. I think Cueto with the heavy sinker approach is a safer option for me. Good ballpark. Same thing I said with Samardzija, so I'm going Cueto.
Yeah, I'm gonna go Cueto for safety, but for McCullers from upside. I've actually, since Doug started talking, all I've been watching is the same GIF that I just retweeted.
Saw a different one. I'm trying to find that one.
This one is by Rob Friedman, also known as at Pitching Ninja, and it shows two of his 2017 two seamers, and then one of the 2018 one that he's breaking out, and it is, oh my god, just dirty. It's just absolutely disturbingly dirty. For me, it's why is Paxton going this much farther ahead than a guy like McCullers? I mean, McCullers has the same kind of upside and the same downside with a lack of innings. I love Lance McCullers. I was big on him last year. Obviously, you know, when he was healthy, he was fantastic. But it just was a matter of staying on the field. If he can use this pitch and stay on the field, I think we're, oh my God. So, but I do think Cueto has the higher floor. And so if you're looking for floor at that point in the draft, it's Cueto. If you're looking for ceiling, it's upside. Bauer is one of those guys that, you know, Matthew Berry, when he used to host the Fantasy Focus podcast, used to say, talk about Francisco Liriano being fantasy kryptonite for him. And I feel like this is the year I finally cut my ties with Trevor Bauer. I just don't trust the gains. Like, you know, we saw some gains last year. I just don't trust that he won't screw with something in the offseason, screw with something on a day off, screw with a drone when he's supposed to be getting ready for the World Series. I just don't trust him.
He had a really nice second half last year, and that was probably the best stretch he's had, and his WHIP was still over 1.3.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's the ceiling isn't all that high because he's gonna hurt you in the WHIP category, and that's an underlooked fantasy category. No one really talks about that, especially among starting pitchers, but that's a really hard one to come back from in a roto league too if you get down. Really, really.
Well, I
tough.
Feel like it's so much more predictable. I just feel like ERA is so much out of the pitcher's hands. I get it, WHIP, hits, they only have so much control, but at the same time, you know, every single hit per nine is going to fall between 6.5 and 8.5, maybe 9. So you got a low range there. Meanwhile, walk rate is incredibly stable. So you see the guys that have high walk rates. Yeah, every once in a while, a guy takes a leap and he moves forward and shaves a ton off his walk rate. But if you can basically assume the same K rate, same walk rate moving forward, well, K rate's my number one, WHIP's my number two because walk rate's the next thing I can trust. I feel like ERA, it's only a loose connection, and wins, forget about it. So it really comes down to those being my focus.
Yeah. All right, I'm going to bundle the next two groups together so we can get on out of here. We've got Jameson Taillon, Dylan Buddy, Michael Fulmer, Kevin Gausman, Clevinger, Waka, Denelson Lamet, and Jacob Faria. Doug, I'll let you finish this one out. Who do you got out of this huge group?
Well, now it's a huge group. Darn, I was ready to split into two. With this,
you
group,
can take as many guys as you Fulmer. Want. If you want to talk about multiple guys, go ahead.
For me, I mean, the main guys I want to talk about are Fulmer, and then I also like Clevinger and Lamet. I feel like Clevinger and Lamet are both players that can shore up the back end of a rotation without killing your ratios. They're at least Clevinger's on a strong team. Lamet's not, but his performance has actually been a lot stronger. But I think Fulmer kind of brings he doesn't have the K rate, but he's shown that strong WHIP once again, and he's shown the ERA that won't kill you. There's something to be said for the fact that someone like Dylan Bundy has never had an ERA under 4. Fulmer has never had an ERA over 4. And so that, again, I can't trust ERA a whole lot, but there becomes a certain line where it becomes obvious, where, okay, that's something that I can trust a lot more. Plus, I know Detroit's a better hitter's park than it used to be, But it's still not Baltimore.
Mm-hmm.
You got to pitch your home games in Baltimore. You're going to have a hard time. And that's why it kind of brings me to Kevin Gausman. I used to love Kevin Gausman. I love how his delivery has morphed from high school to college to the pros, from the minors to the majors. I think his learning curve is off the chart. That said, I've never seen so many people pull a 97-mile-an-hour fastball. It's like they know it's coming. They see it so early in his delivery, or whether he's tipping it or it's just his release point or whatever it is. But I see batters reacting to his 97 as if it's 92.
All right, Matt, who you got?
I just want to say I want to have a funeral for Kevin Gausman on the Friends with Fantasy Benefits airwaves once and for all, because
I'm not talking about that. Wait a minute, because I haven't gotten to talk yet.
I know you haven't. I'm just saying this before, because I am done with him. I have been done with him, and you and Mike Warner, man, are just relentless. You're going to be the guy in 5 years when Gausman has good a season, you and Mike Warner are going to be on Twitter telling everybody, "I told you so." It's kind of like, that's the same with you guys. You guys talk Gausman up so much. So I'm off of that train.
After he invented himself as a knuckleballer?
Right, yeah. He's 39 years old, right. The guys on this tier that I'm going to take is Dinelson Lamet is a nice guy. Yeah, he only has two pitches primarily, but he's a good guy to grab if you miss out on someone like Luis Castillo. He kind of fits a cheaper version of that in a nice ballpark to pitch in, a nice division minus Colorado. So Lamet is a interesting guy in that aspect. And then the other guy I want to touch on is Clevinger. Like, he's got nasty stuff. I just don't know if the rotation spot for him is up his yet. I mean, I know they Francona hinted that they were giving it to Clevinger over Tomlin, but I believe.
Well, and Salazar starting on the DL.
That's true. You're right. So Clevinger does have a rotation spot. He's nasty. He drew a lot of Jacob DeGrom comps when he was coming up. He had the long hair. Yeah. Right. And this stuff is good. I like the stuff for Clevinger. He's a high octane fastball, should pile up good strikeout rates. I like Waka from the sense that if you can pencil him in for 170 innings, he's not going to throw 200 with the shoulder concerns he's got. Jacob Faria is a high floor guy that's interesting. He's probably not going to get much better than he already is, but he could stabilize it. But Michael Fulmer and Lamet are the primary two guys here. Fulmer is a good guy to stabilize all your ratios. Yeah, he doesn't strike out anybody. And yes, Detroit's probably not the most appealing fantasy place to be, you know, from the wins perspective. But I think there's a really good chance Fulmer gets dealt. And I think that's going to be good for him in the wins category. But I like him to stabilize the ratios. So Fulmer and Lamet are my two guys out of this tier.
All right.
You bring up a good point. Sorry not to interject real quick, but the difference between ratios and counting stats. A guy has a bad outing, your counting stats aren't getting dented. But if he has a bad outing, your ratios are hosed. And so once you get past strikeouts, ratios are basically my entire concern. And so once I get out of the first couple of pitchers, I'm just trying to make sure my ratios don't get nailed.
And I love Michael Fulmer, and as long as he, you know, continues to be healthy. I know there was a little elbow flare-up.
That goofy elbow thing. What was that this year? Some weird surgery.
He had ulnar, I can't remember the name of it. Virtually what they did was they moved his ulnar nerve.
Sounds normal.
It's actually supposedly, and you know, this is obviously things I've heard from other people. It's actually correcting kind of a misstep in human evolution. Like, the nerve shouldn't be where it is, and so it keeps getting irritated on certain guys. Jacob DeGrom had this surgery done 2 years ago, and he's, you know, been fine with it ever since.
Former Mets. The Mets prospects, huh? DeGrom and Fulmer.
If you're R.A. Dickey, you don't even need one.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Read something right now about Fulmer. He had finger numbness and hand weakness. So that's not good.
But supposedly,
Jurassic Outlet.
Yeah, supposedly he's okay, though, right now. I mean, I was watching an interview actually with him earlier today. Sounds like he seems fine. You know, we'll see after his next start. Maybe that'll be pretty telling. But again, one of those guys like Doug mentioned that can really help, you know, keep your ratios intact as you're going down if you're not still looking for strikeouts. Lamet is a strikeout guy, but he's still like a two pitch guy. Like he needs
a 100%
third,
a two pitch guy.
He needs that third yeah. pitch. Like
lefties on, hit him hard.
On any other team, he'd be in the bullpen. But because he's on San Diego, sure. they're going to continue to run him out there, which is fine. And if you need strikeouts, he's a decent guy to go after. I want to talk about a guy with over a strikeout an inning, you know, had a 7.7% walk rate, a 1.15 whip last year. And that's second half Kevin Gausman.
See, arbitrary endpoints.
I'm going back to the well. What we saw in the second half is the Kevin Gausman we've been waiting for. You know, it's a crapshoot whether he'll ever put it all together. But we saw the upside of a guy who can strike out a bunch of guys, who can keep the ball in the yard, who can deliver really nice ratios for you. In the second half, I'm willing to bet on again. Like Matt said, I'll go to my grave screaming Kevin Gausman's name. But I'm going to take another shot, Andy, especially because this year you don't have to pay anything for it. You're getting him as like your sixth or seventh starter, and I think that's fine.
I'm always nervous when he's more slider heavy and more splitter heavy the second mm-hmm. half. So okay, I feel like that's desperate. So I don't know.
Okay. He was also throwing 65% fastballs. And like I said, it didn't matter how hard he was throwing. People were turning him around.
Right.
I believe. So stop it, Doug.
Does he still throw two splitters? I see that Brooks Baseball still only has one classified. But there's one thing I've always loved about Gausman, because I'm a big fan of the split. And he's always had two of them. He's had the double splitter action. I don't know. Maybe he's tapered off on one of them. And maybe that's just a totally random thing that I just noticed a while ago.
All right. One guy I'll give a shout out to. I'm really surprised Matt didn't give a shout out to Michael Wacha.
I did. I said he's solid, but he's not going to pitch more than 107 innings because he's got shoulder concerns.
Okay. All right. Well, then I'll leave it at that. I think as a guy who's like your sixth or seventh starter, he's still got.
Oh yeah,
some...
you can do really good there. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
if he's six and seven, right.
All right. That is going to wrap us up. Doug, thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, guys. It was a ton of fun.
We'll definitely have you on again, maybe sometime in season, but remind everybody where you can reach on social media, and then plug your fantastic podcast.
They can reach me on Twitter. I'm at Doug_Thorburn, also at Evo Athletics with an X at the end instead of the CES. That's the Evolution Twitter handle, which has been alive for about 2-3 weeks, hence the complete and utter lack of followers. So I definitely want to get the word out there. And then our podcast, Baseballholics Anonymous, you can get us catch us on iTunes and Stitcher. I'm posting a brand new episode with Paul Spohr tonight. It was supposed to be a super ultra episode with Paul and Vlad, but best laid plans, you know. But I just love this type of year because you can feel the buzz. Everyone's talking baseball. No matter whether it's just for their home team or just the excitement of spring training, everyone's pumped up this time of year, and I am certainly no exception.
I'm pumped up as well, and I'm pumped that you were able to come on. I'm pumped to see you in a couple weeks.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. In like a week and a half, we're going to be hanging out at the Barf League draft later this year because Sammy got married. Congratulations, Sammy.
Yes, he did.
So,
and his wife is awesome. She's so awesome. I actually got a picture of on their wedding night. We went to a bar after the wedding, and I got pictures of his wife wearing the sweatshirt, the Evolution sweatshirt that we had like just printed a couple days before. So she's our first spokesmodel. She may not realize it, but she. Thank you, Eden.
That's awesome. Well, I'm looking forward to hanging out with you and seeing you again, Matt. Why don't you tell people where you can reach and what you're working on?
MD Tomp FWFB, working on my prospect rankings. Did the top 100 kind of on Twitter late last night because I was bored, but the rest of it will come up on the website here, probably top 300 or so. So look for that in the next coming days. One thing I totally forgot to mention, so hopefully I don't go on a long tangent. Michael Wacha in the spring training start, working on a cutter and a curveball. He's throwing them a decent amount of times. So, normally, if you're not familiar, he's a fastball changeup guy, if you're not familiar with the arsenal. So if he can add a curveball, it looked all right. It was a 12-6 variety, kind of Wainwright-esque. And the cutter was a nice pitch against lefties, so hopefully he can. He gave up a lot of soft contact that kind of fell through for some bad luck against the Marlins, but hopefully the gains can stick, and yeah.
And you can reach me on Twitter at JustinMasonFWFB. Email me or the show, friendsoffantasybenefits@gmail.com. You can still go out and get our Friends of Fantasy Benefits draft guide, 255 pages of awesomeness, available on Amazon.com, or if you want to email me, I can email you a PDF if you that's more interesting to you. Then you can read all my work over at Fangraphs, Fantasy Alarm, Fantrax, hear me on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network, or on Sleeper on the Bus, and of course, on Friends of Fantasy Benefits. That will wrap us up for this episode. For Doug, Matt, and myself, thank you for listening. Have a fantastic baseball season. Every night I get you on the telephone. We sleep and we talk and we play.